Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Formula One Grid Talk. This will be episode 168. My name is Tom Horrocks, and tonight I have the pleasure of hosting the first of our new midweek podcast, the Fireside F1 series. We will be aiming to bring you detailed analysis and opinions from the world of Formula One in a casual one-to-one chat style. Tonight, though, given that it's our first episode, we thought we'd do something completely different. So today's episode, we are joined by a whole host of Grid Talk regulars who I'll introduce shortly. But first, we'd like to welcome to the show for the first time a man who is marking his 20th year in working in Formula One this season. It's the de facto Formula One statistician, Mr. Sean Kelly. Welcome to the podcast, Sean.
Thank you, Tom, for having me. And let's hope the bandwidth, lasts long enough that we can get all this in.
Yes, so we've started 10 minutes late with various technical issues and one person not even involved. So we'll struggle on as best we can. I think we're being a little bit ambitious with this, but we will do what we can. So, Sean, you're no stranger to us, of course, but to our listeners at home, who are you? What do you do and how do you do it?
I am essentially Formula One's go-to statistician for everybody. If you've watched the TV broadcast of Formula One in the last two decades, you'll have heard my facts and figures on the air. If you've been to a Grand Prix, if you've been to the Paddock Club, if you've done F1 experiences, that sort of stuff, I may have been your host. So they generally use me as the all-round anorak. I guess I'm the anorak's anorak because the people who are supposed to know come to ask me for information when they're on the air.
Fantastic. And you said you marked this is 20 years now in Formula One. How did you even get started in that?
It was a complete blag. I had no experience whatsoever. I basically talked my way in with my amazing snake oil salesman skills, and they haven't figured me out yet. Here's to it. Another 20 years, let's hope.
Fantastic. So we're assuming then that, we'll assume that you're incredibly knowledgeable about Formula One. We look forward to seeing what you can do for our quiz. So speaking of the quiz, we need more than just one person for a quiz. So I'd like to introduce the rest of our contestants for today. First up, we have the good co-host of the Monkey Seat podcast. It's Mr. Carl King. Hopefully his bandwidth is with us. Hello, Carl.
Hello. Hello. Can you hear me?
We can hear you. We couldn't see you, unfortunately.
That's good. It's good. I think we might just have to hear me.
Yeah, yes. I think so. So next we have Everything F1's Tom Downey. Hello, Tom.
Hello.
Always good to see your face, Tom. How have you been?
I'm very well. How are you?
Yes, fantastic. I've been better than I am right now. I'm not going to lie. We'll see what happens. We'll get through this. And so next up, we also have the engineering graduate and Grid Talk host, Owain Medford.
Hello, I was a bit slow on the old camera turn on there.
It's fine. Well, good to see you as always, and it's good to test your knowledge for a change as well. And then finally, we have Olivia Cairo, who is F1 Total writer.
Hello.
Right, so we're going to get into the quiz now. The first 20 questions are going to be based on the Formula One season of 2021. Some of you might remember it. It was a pretty boring season. Not a lot happened. And the second 20 questions will be based on historic Formula One from 1950 onwards. Don't panic. There's not going to be a huge amount from the 1950s, just the odd one or two thrown in there for good measure. They are mostly statistically based, multiple choice questions, and you get more points the quicker you answer the questions. If you get a question wrong, though, you do get 0 points for that question. So it's not all about speed, or that's what's at least what people keep telling me anyway. This show is not going out live, but if you want to play along at home the same way the panel is playing, with probably slightly better bandwidth, then pause the recording, head to Kahoot.com, sign up for a free account, and search for Fireside F1 to play along and test yourself against the Statman. Back in the room, though, we're all ready to go. So what I'll do is we'll start the quiz. Once I finish reading the first question, you will have 10 seconds to key in your answer, or you get a big, fat zero. So here we go. We're going to start the quiz. The first question is, how many points did Sergio Perez score in sprint races this season? We had 3 sprint races, Britain, Italy, and Brazil. So how many points did Sergio Perez score in sprint races? Your 4 options for selection are 0, 1, 4, or 5. And we have 4 people got that one right. The correct answer was 0, and one person put 1. The correct answer was 0 points. He got a DNF in Britain, ninth in Italy, and a fourth in Brazil. So all round then, it's the scores tally up as you see there, and Big Daddy is currently leading the standings after one question. Statman was very honest there because, full disclosure, we had to do a quick restart of the quiz here, and he was the only person who put the same question, same answer twice. So he's, his honesty is counting against him here. So we'll move on to question two then. Carlos Sainz finished every race in 2021, but how many races did he finish outside the top 10? And your options are 0, 1, 2, or 4. 1 second to go, and we have three correct answers and two wrong answers there. The correct answer is two. Two races outside the top 10. It was Portugal and France. And we have a new leader, which we'll update a bit later on. Question three, then. How many different nations recorded a fastest lap point in a Grand Prix event last season? So how many nations recorded a fastest lap point in a Grand Prix event last season? As in the driver's nationality, that is. The options there are 2, 4, 6, 8. Who do we appreciate? The correct answer is 6, which one person got got that one right, and then two people said 4, and two people said 8. Do we know the nations? Let's throw it to Sean. Do we know what nations they were that recorded the fastest lap?
Nope.
Oh, okay. It was Australia, France, Great Britain, Netherlands, Mexico, and Finland. Okay. Question four, then. Who was the only driver in 2021 to record a pole position but not record a point for fastest lap? So we have Charles Leclerc, Daniel Ricciardo, Lewis Hamilton, or Lando Norris. That's the four options there. Three correct ones. Charles Leclerc was the correct answer. One person said Lando Norris. Sorry, one person said Daniel Ricciardo, and one person said Lando Norris. Question five is, how many drivers failed to start a race that they managed to qualify for? How many drivers failed to start a race that they managed to qualify for? 1, 2, 3, or 0 are your options there. And the correct answer there was 2. It was Leclerc in Monaco, Tsunoda in Italy. We had Mazepin and Kimi Raikkonen were also withdrawn from races, but they didn't qualify for those races. So that's why the answer is 2. Question 6. Which driver scored the most 11th places in 2021? Raikkonen, Giovinazzi, Russell, or Tsunoda? And there we go. The correct answer is Antonio Giovinazzi, which most of you got. So yes, that was it was 4 was the answer there.
I just wanted it.
Which is Baku, Turkey, USA, Mexico. Russell, yeah. Would have been nice to have been Russell, but no. Right, so what are we up to now? We are up to number 7. So this is a bit of an oddball question, this one. This is more of like a tiebreaker question, this one, but it's a good job it's multiple choice. How many points in total were awarded in the 2021 season? I'll be impressed if anyone knows this, but it's a good job it's multiple choice. How many points in total were awarded in the 2021 season? That is 395.5. 525,600, 4,415, or 2,600.5.
I'm too busy laughing at 525,000.
That's your musical reference there. So predictably, just the one person got that one right. I don't know who it was, but yeah, the correct answer is 4,415. So that's driver and constructor points thrown together as well, which is why it's that. I thought, yeah. And I think it's your
one that got it right. Was that me? So, well, yes.
It was you, yes. Okay, we'll have a quick check on the scores in a little bit.
I was going to say, the way I got it, obviously, if it's half points for one race, then it can only be... I'm an idiot. Don't worry.
Oh, you still got it right. The idiot got it right.
I think you just freaked it away.
Yeah. So, which two teams finished the season as the joint most reliable team with just two non-starts or non-finishers each? So that's which two teams finished the season as the joint most reliable team with just two non-starts or finishers each? Your options there: Red Bull, Alpine, McLaren, or Ferrari. So it's a multiple choice. Press both and then click submit. Which two teams were the joint? And the correct answer there was McLaren and Ferrari with just two retirements each. It was Leclerc in Monaco, Norris and Leclerc in Hungary, and Ricciardo in Brazil. And the next question, question nine, which team collected the most penalty points over the whole 2021 season with 14 points? Which team collected the most penalty points in the 2021 season with 14 points? Your options are Haas, Aston Martin, Red Bull, or Williams. And the correct answer there was Red Bull. Two of you got that correct. One person said Haas and two people said Aston Martin. Right, so question 10, and then we'll do a quick score update, is 2021 saw the introduction of a budget cap. Now, according to Forbes magazine, which of these items is listed as an exemption from the Formula One budget cap? So something that is not included in the budget cap. Your four options are corporation tax, fuel, new headsets for Toto Wolff, or accident damage. And yeah, three out of five got that correct. It's corporation tax is the correct answer. So after 10 questions, then we're halfway through the 2021 season. And Owain is currently leading with 5,377 points. Olivia, second. Carl, third. And Big Daddy in fourth, which is Tom Downey, with the Statman being honest at the start has cost him dearly. So we'll move on to the second half of 2021. But before we do that, how do you rate your performance so far, Sean?
It's every bit reflecting the fact that I haven't looked at anything for 2 months, because at the end of the season, I go away and drop everything and just forget that 2021 ever happened, because you're so involved in it. You're just like, I don't want to look at this stuff until I have to. And next week is when we start. So it does a little bit of a reflection of that. I must say, though, Stewart's inquiry.
Go on.
Did not start question was incorrectly worded, because you said which drivers didn't start a race that they qualified for, and Niki de Mazepin did qualify in Abu Dhabi but did not start the race because he tested his positive test was revealed on Sunday morning. I know because it was there. So that was an incorrectly worded question.
You're probably correct in that case. Would you have got that question correct then?
I still don't think I would have done, because I forgot Charles Leclerc. But Mazepin was the person I thought of. I thought, so you're going to say Mazepin, and then you didn't. I was like, wait a minute. That's
okay. I will. I'll take that on the chin as a mistake. Yeah, I'll take that one. I once got a Formula One question wrong in a quiz, and I argued with the quiz master about it, because he claimed that Eddie Irvine was British, which is not the case. And he also claimed that he won the world championship. Yeah, so.
Eddie Irvine is British. He was born in the UK, therefore he would qualify as a UK citizen, but he would not be.
But you would say he's English. Yeah. But the question was about him being world champion, because he claimed he won the world championship. And it's like, no, Eddie Irvine never won the world championship. Oh, I see. But yeah, it was the whole
funny story,
joint
by the
thing.
Way, side note about incorrectly worded questions. I was in a quiz. I was at a Will Buxton thing once, and he said he'd given away this big prize. I forget what it was. And it was like a Rolex watch or something like that. And he said, okay, folks, in which country did David Coulthard make his Grand Prix debut? And somebody yelled out Portugal, and he went, yes, that's right. And I literally had to go in and say, no, that's not right. He did not make his debut in Portugal. And they had to redo the quiz in front of the whole audience. But I felt, I felt like I justified my involvement in the whole thing by completely ruining the whole evening. Anyway, carry on. I'm not going to do that with you.
Absolutely. Right, so we'll move on to the second half of 2021 then. So question 11, which driver broke down on track on the installation lap on the first race of the season in Bahrain but still managed to start the race? So which driver broke down on track on the installation lap in Bahrain but still managed to start the race? Testing your knowledge, going back quite a long way here. And it's the options are Yuki Tsunoda, Kimi Raikkonen, Burton Mylander, just for fun, and Sergio Perez. And yep, all five people got Sergio Perez, the correct answer there. Well done. So Carl's on a hot streak at the moment, having answered three questions correct in a row. The next question then, question 12. Lewis Hamilton won the British Grand Prix in controversial circumstances last season. Sorry, Tom. But how many times has he won at that track? So Lewis Hamilton won the British Grand Prix in controversial circumstances last season. But how many times has he won at that track? Is it 6, 7, 8, or 9? Now, this one I will be. Oh, so one person got that correct with 8. Was that you, Sean? Yeah, well done, Sean.
It was
fantastic.
Me, yeah.
Justified your appearance on this program.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, justified my appearance. Yeah.
Yes. So just to throw it there, who else also holds the same record of 8 wins at one circuit? That's just to throw one off.
Michael Schumacher did it at Magny Cours.
Sure, is it Schumacher in France?
And
correct. Yes.
That's the only one.
Yeah, because Hamilton's got 7 in Canada, I think.
No, he's got 8 in Hungary as well. He levelled that. It's 8 in Hungary and 8 in Silverstone. But I only know that because of Wikipedia. So Wikipedia could be wrong. Yes, so we all know that there wasn't a race at the Belgian Grand Prix this year. But who officially scored the fastest lap in the non-race at the Belgian Grand Prix this year? The four options are Nikita Mazepin, Max Verstappen, George Russell, or Pierre Gasly? Two corrects. It was, of course, Nikita Mazepin, but he didn't get the point for it because he was the last guy on track, the last across the line, so had the most speed. Got the fastest lap, but didn't get the point for it because he wasn't in the top 10.
Am I allowed to interject here?
Yes.
The fastest lap was not awarded in Belgium. There was no fastest lap. It was annulled. So if you look in the record books, Mazepin's rather comical fastest lap was not awarded at all. It doesn't count in the record books. It doesn't just, it's not just that it doesn't count as a bonus. It didn't, it was not awarded at all.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then I will, take that slap on the wrist as well.
The correct answer
is still,
the correct answer was no one set the fastest lap.
So that the correctly worded
in the record books, because we've got one less fastest lap in Grand Prix history than we have races, which is very weird.
Mm. So the correct way to word the question would have been who recorded, like it's not recorded either, is it? Who completed the lap of the Belgian Grand Prix in the shortest the time? Lap? Yes, that would have been the correct way to word it. Okay, fantastic.
Before it was,
okay, so question 14. Mr. Saturday, George Russell increased his reputation as the qualifying king in 2021, but how many times did he qualify for Q3? How many times did George Russell qualify for Q3 in qualifying in 2021? Is it 4, 6, 10, or 14? The correct answer is 4. Correct. So we have 3 people got that correct, and I would have thought it was more than that, but it was only 4 Grand Prix because it was him getting into Q2 was the impressive thing. The Q3 thing was just crazy. So yeah, that was Austria, Britain, Belgium, and Russia. Although he didn't start in the top 10 in Britain because of the sprint race penalty, but he did make it into Q3. So in Sao Paulo, question 15, this is, in Sao Paulo, Lewis Hamilton was disqualified from qualifying for his DRS flat being too wide. But what was the margin it allegedly fell foul of the regulations by? Your four options are 2 millimetres, 0.02 millimetres, 0.2 centimetres or 0.2 millimetres. And yet we got 0.2 millimetres is the correct answer there. Just the one person got that wrong, which is 0.02 millimetres. I'm not sure that's even measurable, 0.02 millimetres. But yes, the correct answer was 0.2 millimetres. So,
trust me, Tom.
I panicked.
That is definitely measurable. My professor would have something to say.
Not measurable.
About it.
Okay, engineering student, that's fine. Measurable by the human eye. Question 16. How many different drivers recorded a podium in Formula 1 in 2021? How many different drivers recorded a podium in 2021? Your options are 7, 9, 12, or 13. And the correct answer is 13, which is Hamilton, Verstappen, Bottas, Perez, Norris, Ricciardo, Leclerc, Sainz, Gasly, Alonso, Ocon, Vettel, and Russell. Even though that wasn't a race in Spa, but we'll let Russell have it because we like him. Question 17. Last season, how many drivers scored consecutive pole positions on a Saturday? How many drivers scored consecutive pole positions on a Saturday? Your options are 2, 3, 4, or 5. And most people got that correct. That the correct answer is 4. It was Verstappen who got 4 in a row. And then he got 2 in a row. He got France, Styria, Austria, Britain, and then he got Belgium, Netherlands. And then Hamilton got only one set of 2, which was Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Bottas got Mexico and Brazil, and Leclerc got Monaco and Baku. Question 18. What is the current longest point scoring run? Oh, sorry, go on, Sean. Have I made another mistake?
No, I was curious, like, what consecutive pole positions on a Saturday?
So, finished fastest in Q3.
Well, it wouldn't be that, because you could have that on a Friday.
Oh, that's true, yeah. It could be another badly worded question for me, then.
Yeah, I was going to say, like pole position was always awarded on Saturday.
That is true, yeah. So, I probably misworded that. I probably meant to word that. Oh, no, because maybe I was talking about the qualifying, not the sprint. I don't know how I worded that, but I've worded that wrong anyway. But either way, it doesn't change the result of the question anyway. It's just badly worded. Question 18. What is the current longest point scoring run in Formula One as of the end of this season? What is the current longest point scoring run in Formula One as of the end of this season? So it's 49, 15, 12, or 6. So it's the currently running point scoring record. Yeah, the answer there is 15. It's Carlos Sainz from Styria onwards. It's a correct answer. So 3 out of 5 got that correct. And Statman has climbed his way up to second in the standings now. He's climbing. We'll do a scores recap after the question 20. But so question 19.
Can I say one other thing? That is, yes, of course, assuming that you're only counting points in the races. Because if you count sprint races as well, Max Verstappen has a longer point streak than Carlos Sainz. You have two different definitions of the point streak.
Oh, really? That's an interesting take on it. So is Verstappen's point scoring longer then? So that'd be Grand Prix point scorers then?
If Grand Prix weekends as opposed to Grand Prix race point streak. They events. Are now two different right, categories okay. as of 2021. They never used to be. But now we have points on a Saturday. And if you include those, Verstappen has a longer streak than Sainz. And I know this because I tripped over this very stat when we were on the air once, which is how I remember.
Well, there we go. One thing I've learned today is that I'm not a quiz master, and don't invite a stat man on if you want to be a quiz master, because you will be completely debunked at every turn. But yes, that's
sorry. I promise I'm really nice at parties. I don't ruin it every time.
I love it. Personally, I love it. I love it. But anyway, question 20. How many nations were represented by drivers in races in the 2021 season? So the options there are 7, 13, 12, or 15. How many nations were represented? And we've got just the one correct answer there. It's 13 nations, which is Netherlands, Britain, Finland, Mexico, Spain, Monaco, Australia, France, Germany, Canada, Japan, Italy, and Poland. And RAF is not a nation, so they're not counting Russia because they weren't represented. Or am I wrong there, Sean? Should I have represented them? No, fantastic.
That's
right. We'll do a quick scores recap then.
Someone said Russia, and no, don't count that.
Nope, sorry, they weren't represented. Okay, so quick update on the scores then. We have Owain leading the way with Statman in second place, with Carl third, Big Daddy fourth, and Olivia just behind in fifth. So you'll be glad to, like most of us, we're glad to see the back of the 2021 season. I'm certainly glad to see the back of that part of the 2021 quiz after a few false starts. And some of you may notice that we are now doing a 39 question quiz due to a slight technical issue. So we're just going to move on to the second half of the quiz, which is the historic Formula One. So we'll start off with a question that I will be very disappointed if Sean doesn't get correct for reasons that will soon become very clear. So the question is, who won the 1987 Brazilian Grand Prix? And you should know it because apparently it's the first race you ever watched. So that's Emerson Fittipaldi, Ayrton Senna, Alan Prost or John Watson. We have two people saying Alan Prost, three people saying Ayrton Senna. It is, in fact, Alan Prost. Please tell me you got that right, Sean.
If you'll indulge me for just 1 second, just wait 5 seconds there. Talk amongst yourselves while I take my headset off. I'm just going to go and get an artifact from the cupboard over here. Just wait 1 second.
Go for it. He's going to go and get some memorabilia now from that race.
I wasn't even born.
What we have here, this is a copy of the master, the BBC production master of the highlights of those race, of that race, which the BBC gave to me as a 25th anniversary gift in 2012. So April 12th this year it will be 35 years. So I'll watch it again.
Fantastic. Hopefully Alan Prost still wins. So move on to the second question. Yes, I promise they're all not based around Sean, these ones, but this one should also, I would expect Sean to get right. Who won the 2003 Australian Grand Prix? Which, again, you should know because it was your first race covering Formula One, from what I understand. The options are Mika Hakkinen, David Coulthard, Michael Schumacher or Rubens Barrichello. And I remember watching this one live. The correct answer is, of course, David Coulthard. Yep, we have one person say Mika Hakkinen and one person say Michael Schumacher. Surprising enough, no one said Rubens Barrichello. Poor Rubens. But yes, the correct answer was David Coulthard. So question three in the second section of this quiz is, how many times did Lewis Hamilton win a race in his rookie F1 season? How many times did Lewis Hamilton win a race in his rookie F1 season? The options are 1, 3, 4, or 5. And the correct answer there is 4. So we have one person said 3, two people said 5, and two people said 4. So moving on to we'll do a quick scores update on that. And we have Owain still leading the way, Statman second, Carl's moved up to third, Big Daddy up to fourth, and Olivia unfortunately dropped down. But it's really close. Those bottom three are really close together. Question 4. Abu Dhabi has been on the calendar since 2009, but how many times has the title been decided there? How many times has the title been decided in Abu Dhabi? Your multiple choice options are 4, 5, 3, or 2. And the answers coming there. We had two correct answers there. It is, in fact, 4 times with
Can I get more points if I name the years?
I will give you man points if you can name the years. Go for it.
Okay, so there was 2010. There was 2014, because 2014 gets double points. 2016, because it was Hamilton versus Rosberg. And obviously 2021, because there was a little incident at the end.
Was there? I don't remember that. It's been wiped from my memory now.
No one ever asks me about it.
I bet they don't. Right. Question 5 then. Who holds the record for the lowest place finish in a Formula One race? The only driver to ever finish 24th. So who holds the record for the lowest ever finish in a Formula One race? Classified finish. Is it Martin Brundle, Nikita Mazepin, Naren Kartikeyan, or Bruno Giacomelli? Everyone got that one right. Poor Narain. Poor Narain. Never Narains, but it pours. That's terrible. Cut that out, Chris. Right. Question 6. Kimi Raikkonen holds the record for most Grand Prix entries with 353. But who is second on the list of Grand Prix entries? Your options are Michael Schumacher, Fernando Alonso, Stirling Moss, or Rubens Barrichello. And yet we've got four people. Fernando Alonso, just the one saying Rubens. He did hold the record at one point, I believe, but he's been usurped. It is Fernando Alonso. So now we move on to question seven. Who is the oldest driver to start an F1 race at 55 years old? Who is the oldest driver to start an F1 race at 55 years old? Is it Kimi Raikkonen, Juan Manuel Fangio, Luis Chiron, or Alberto Ascari? And just the one correct there, Luis Chiron. Now, any prizes for guessing who that was? It was Statman. Do you remember which race that was, Sean?
1955 Monaco Grand Prix.
100%. Bang on.
Yeah.
I knew you'd be better at this section of the quiz than the first half. So, next question then. I moved on to it accidentally. So, Mercedes hold the record for percentage wins versus starts with 49.8. But who is second on the list for percentage wins? The options there are Ferrari, McLaren, Lotus, and Braun. And yes, the answer is Braun GP with a 47.1% win rating. I told you they were statistically based, didn't I? Question nine, which team won the first ever Formula One Constructors' Championship? Which team won the first ever Formula One World Constructors' Championship? And you've got Ferrari, McLaren, Van Wall, or Cooper Climax are your four options. And three out of five correct. That is Van Wall was the correct answer. Yes. Moving on to question 10, halfway through the second half of the quiz. What is the record for most numbers of pit stops in a race? And this is one I'm going to throw to Sean as well afterwards, I think. So what is the record for most number of pit stops in a race? The options are 5, 63, 79, or 88. I have a feeling... Oh, no, we just got the one person got that correct. So let's see who that was. Yeah. Sean, do you remember which race it was?
I think that it was the 2011 Turkish Grand Prix.
It was the Hungarian Grand Prix, yes, but it was 2011, the Pirelli shambles.
The Hungarian Grand Prix was a wet race, whereas the Turkish Grand Prix was a dry race. So the fact that there was like 80 pit stops in the Turkish Grand Prix is actually more impressive than it being a wet race.
Yes, yes. But yeah, 88 pit stops in one race. I remember that race. That was a crazy, crazy race. So moving on then to question 11. How many different tyre manufacturers have been represented in a Formula One race? Is it 8, 9, 12, or 13? It's different tyre manufacturers. And the correct answer is 9. Can we name them all? And it was Olivia that got that one right. Go on then, give it a go.
Goodyear.
Yep.
Pirelli.
Yes.
Bridgestone.
Yes.
Firestone.
Yes.
Dunlop.
Yes.
Avon.
Yes.
Continental.
Yes.
Michelin.
Yes.
And the most obscure one, Engelbert.
Yes, 100%. I've never heard of Engelbert.
I got the question wrong. Because I didn't count them up in my head in time. But yeah. It was 9. So well done, Olivia. Yeah. But yeah, Engelbert was on the Ferrari in 1958.
Yes. Was it just the one race then, Engelbert? Go on, Olivia.
No, they ran that tyre in 58 throughout the season with Pirellis, I think.
Right.
I didn't even know that. I just guessed.
Oh, you're supposed to impress people with your amazing knowledge of tyres on Formula One cars.
Oh yeah, no, I'm the tyre guy. Come to me for the tyre answers.
Right. So question 12 then. Which engine manufacturer, not on the current F1 grid, has won the most races? Which engine manufacturer, not on the current Formula One grid, has won the most races? In Formula One, this is, of course. Is it Honda, TAG, Ford or Alfa Romeo? Which engine manufacturer has won the most? And yep, the correct answer, 4 out of 5 correct, it is Ford. Although now, this question is now out of date. You can tell I wrote this a few weeks ago because Honda obviously are now still technically in Formula One. After the,
remains
the most
to be
recent.
Seen. Like, are we going to be counting them as Honda or Honda Racing Company? Or how's that? What are the semantics of that going to work out as being?
Yeah, that's, I tell you what, that's who'd want to be a statistician, eh? When you've got stuff like that muddying the waters.
Well, we already have that in history with Honda and with Mugen Honda. You speak to Eddie Jordan, he's adamant that the car that he drove, that he had in 99 was a Honda engine, even though it's Mugen Honda credit. So, yeah, it's another one of those things where there's a little bit of creative accountancy that might be in play.
Yes. Okay, so question 13 then. Which driver has taken part in the most F1 races without winning a race? Which driver has taken part in the most F1 races without winning a race? Your options are Andrea De Cesaris, Martin Brundle, Sergio Perez, or Satoru Nakajima. I hope I pronounced that correctly. And just the one person got that right. The answer was Andrea De Cesaris.
Were we counting people who hadn't won a race, you know, who'd gone a long time without winning a race and winning a race? Or, you know, because obviously Perez went, 190 odd races before winning a race?
Yeah.
Does that not count because he has then won a race? Do you get what I mean?
I understand where you're coming from.
Those are separate statistical categories. That's most races before winning a race, as opposed to most career races without ever winning. Okay. But Andrea De Cesaris had 208 Grand Prix without a win. So
either way,
if Perez had not won that race, he would have still not been at that record at that point.
Yeah. So, the answer was Andrea De Cesaris. And I've got Sean backing me up for once on this one, as opposed to completely debunking my question. So, but yeah, I see where you came from with that. And I was a bit mean to put Perez in there as an option, to be honest. Right.
No, you weren't. It was correct. What you said was correct. Carry on.
Okay. Sterling Moss holds the record for the most wins without a world championship in Formula One. But who is second? So who is second to Sterling Moss for most victories without ever winning a world championship? Your options are Eddie Irvine, Valtteri Bottas, Ralf Schumacher, or David Coulthard. And the questions are in. And three people thought it was Valtteri Bottas. Nobody got David Coulthard. Clean sweep.
I was waiting to see David Carlos Coulthard. Reutemann on there. I thought it was going to be Reutemann. and he wasn't come up as an answer. So I was like,
It was old DC. Old DC. Right. Which driver holds the record for most consecutive pole position? So races in a row getting pole position. Who holds the record for most consecutive pole positions? Your options are Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton, Ayrton Senna, or Sebastian Vettel. All absolute dynamite qualifiers. And yep, the correct answer, Ayrton Senna. Two out of four got that correct. And two out of five got that correct. And yes, it was 8 in a row between Spain 88 and USA 89.
Fun fact.
I think.
USA 89 was the race in which he beat Jim Clark's all-time record. Clark was the record holder on 33. That pole position simultaneously broke the consecutive, set the consecutive record streak and broke the all-time record streak in the same day.
Wow. Okay, so who is the driver to hold, sorry, who is the only driver to hold 8 pole positions at 2 circuits? Who's the only driver to hold 8 pole positions at 2 circuits? Your options are Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, Ayrton Senna, or Michael Schumacher. And the answer is Lewis Hamilton. 3 out of 5 correct there. He holds 8 pole positions in Australia and Hungary. But he doesn't have that many wins at Australia, weirdly. Doesn't tend to win Australian Grand Prix. So a quick update on the scores before we get to the last couple of questions then. Sean, way out in front now with 18,608 points, with Owain in second with 13,000 points. Big Daddy in third with 11,800. Carl with 11,000 and Olivia 10,700 just behind. Again, those bottom three are really, really close. So next question then is question 17. Who is the youngest driver to qualify on pole position for a Formula One Grand Prix? The youngest driver ever to qualify on pole. And I'll give you a clue. He's 21 years old. Sebastian Vettel, Lewis Hamilton, Max Verstappen, or Michael Schumacher? And yeah, it is Sebastian Vettel. Correct. Just the one person got that correct. And sure enough,
they've got
it was
so young now, haven't Max, they?
Yeah, well, Max Verstappen, I was following
that's
that for ages.
It's an odd record. It's an odd record because it hasn't progressed inwards like you would have thought. Vettel was 21 years, 73 days at Monza 2008. We all thought Verstappen would beat it, and he never did. He could beat the front row record, but he never beat the pole record because he had to wait until Mexico 2020, whenever it was. Not Mexico, Hungary, sorry. Hungary 2019, before he finally got a pole position.
Yeah, because everyone thought he was going to break it at Mexico the previous year, but then Ricciardo nipped pole off him.
Right.
Then he went and lost the lead into turn one anyway. Because I remember watching that race with, and I was just desperate for Ricciardo to get pole just so that Vettel wouldn't get beaten to the youngest man for the fastest lap. For pole position. Right. Okay, so we move on to question 18. Now, this is one that I think, Tom, you'll get correct. Which driver holds the record for most races without recording a pole position? Which driver holds the record for most races without recording a pole position? Purely because you mentioned him earlier. Is it Nikita Mazepin, Sergio Perez, Takuma Sato, or Alberto Ascari? And yep, Sergio Perez. Probably too much of a clue there for everyone. Gave it away a little bit, but there we go. Sergio Perez. Question 19. Who has the highest percentage of race starts to podium finishes? Who has the highest percentage of race starts to podium finishes? This is a bit of an odd one, this one. Is it Max Verstappen, Juan Manuel Fangio, Dorini Serafini, or Bernie Eccleston? Who said Bernie? Come on, hands up. Who said Bernie? No, it was Dorini Serafini because he had one entry and one podium in 1950. So he has 100% races versus podium finishes.
Yeah.
Apparently.
And Bernie, of course, entered two races in 58, I think it was. Monaco, yeah. I think it was the British Grand Prix. And Cliff Allison drove the car instead, I think it was.
He didn't actually start any races.
But he never started the Grand Prix.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, he was podium. He never finished on the podium. Definitely not. Right, and then the final question: which driver has recorded the most podium finishes in Formula One without recording a win? Which driver has recorded the most podium finishes in Formula One without recording a win? Is it Martin Brundle, Lando Norris, Romain Grosjean, or Nick Heidfeld? And it's Nick Heidfeld is the correct answer, who holds the same record in Formula E, I believe, or certainly used to anyway. Whether he still does, I don't know.
Still does.
So there we go. Congratulations, the stat man. And the correct. So we got third place was Big Daddy. Second place, Owain. And surprise, surprise, the winner, Mr. Statman, Sean Kelly. Thank you very much. But a special shout out there.
Massively embarrassing if I hadn't done well.
runners up there, Olivia and Carl, just behind fourth and fifth there. But special shout out there for Owain there who led the first half. I know we had a bit of an honesty issue with the first question where we had a bit of a full start, but even so, I think it was still a solid performance from Owain there in there to actually top the standings at the halfway point. So well done. Very thoroughly enjoyable there. So what I'd like to do now is hand over to any of our fellow podcasters who would like to ask some questions of Sean as he's here, provided he's still willing to stay after that debacle, of course. So does anyone have any questions for Sean?
It's just based around sort of stats and sports, really, and particularly with the sort of, I guess, how, obviously Formula One being what sort of 20 into its 72nd year now. But do you ever find that some of the stats maybe going back to maybe the 50s and 60s are almost a bit meaningless in some ways? I know that I've seen that with maybe the NFL or something, you know, those that were very statistics based sports where they bring them in quite a lot. And I always find myself sitting and watching TV and just thinking, well, that can't mean anything, can it?
Yeah, I do. And you're right. I mean, for instance, points, you know, most total points is a meaningless category now because there's no direct comparison, you know, because back in the day, you used to have 8 points for a win. You know, now 8 points doesn't get you on the podium. So, yeah, there are certain categories where I think this is irrelevant to the narrative. And what's important is when it comes to facts and figures is that we don't detract from what you've come to actually watch. We're here to provide some perspective as opposed to, oh, you know, isn't it amazing that we know all of these facts and figures? That's not what you're trying to achieve. What you're actually trying to achieve is, hey, that's an interesting thing. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way before. I always say that the job of the statistics, it's like the ball boy at Wimbledon. Like if we do our job properly, we speed things up, we make it more interesting, but you never notice that we are actually doing it.
I think that says a lot more about why I'm not in show business and more in academia at this point.
So well, I always say in TV, keep it simple. You know, you've got to be careful. You know, you don't go into too much. I agree, certain US sports, they go overboard with it. You know, there's too many caveats. You've got to keep it simple because otherwise you're just showing off, you know, and you just, you know, just annoy your audience. And, you know, you don't want that.
Speaking of AWS graphics, yes, is there anything else you want to ask Sean while you're there, Owen?
Oh, D. Cameron. Oh, goodness me.
As you've got the hot seat now.
No, there's a bonus category of questions there.
Yeah,
I was going to say this is quite warm. This one. goodness.
Yeah. Can I gamble my prizes against tonight's star prize?
Yeah. So, does anyone else have anything they want to ask Sean? Carl, you've always got something to say.
So you said that you get asked this quite a bit. So what do you think about the final race of this last season?
Well, I was honest about it when it happened, which was, and I'll give you a run through of how I experienced it. I was in the paddock club. I was at Pirelli and the Latifi crashed. We all looked at each other like, oh, you couldn't have scripted this better, you know? And the thing is it's beyond reproach because it's like the Mercedes powered car has crashed, which is going to screw up Mercedes cruising to the championship. You couldn't say it was a fix. You know, it wasn't like a yeah. Honda powered car. An AlphaTauri had gone off. So like that was off the table. And then obviously what happened and immediately when Verstappen won the race, I thought Stewart's inquiry here that I'm not sure we followed everything the way we were supposed to do everything. What happens these days is that everybody jumps to conclusions. And I've learned in the past, across my career, from occasions when I jumped to conclusion, that you end up looking really stupid if it turns out later on. Say, well, if you look at the regulations on page 72, article 38.7-2, line 4, it says that this was done correctly. And then you look like an idiot. So what I wanted was the chance for Michael Massey to give a full chronological perspective of how we arrived at these decisions, why they were made, and so on. And so far, we haven't had that, really. So I think it's not a very good look that we've still got this sort of hanging in limbo, almost as if to say, it's like a don't mention the war type of mentality. But I'm still reserving judgment until I get the whole perspective, because It's obviously left a lot of sour taste in everybody's mouth. And it's a shame because I think last season was the greatest season we've ever had in Formula One. And I know there are certain people who would never entertain the idea that this was a better season than the days of Prost and Senna and so on. Well, I lived through all of those and this was a better season. It just was. And like the Prost Senna era, the zenith of political machination, it ended controversially. And it didn't sit with a lot of fans very well. So we really need to clean up. You know, if things went right, show us how it went right, and you know, we jump into conclusions. And if they went wrong, then there needs to be an accountability and say, look, we screwed this up. It was, what can you do? We didn't do it right. Whatever. But I think the important thing is to be honest with the facts and say, look, this is why what happened, and if something was done wrong, we need to take steps to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
Yeah. Absolutely. I totally agree with you there that, you know, that this shouldn't happen again.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I mean, I think most fans would have been okay. They would have understood if it had finished behind the safety car. It would have been unsatisfactory and a bit of an anticlimax to what's been a great season. I think we would have all said, well, yeah, that's normally how we do things. But then also, had the thing is, I say this a lot, if had Massey stopped the race right away, people would have said, ah, look at that, you've just given Verstappen a massive advantage. He should have finished behind the safety car. So he didn't stop the race. And then everybody said, ah, now look, you've given Verstappen a massive advantage because of the way you've actually done it. So whatever he was going to do, somebody was going to have a go at him for saying, why didn't you do it some other way? So that needs to be taken into consideration as well.
Yeah, I think there should be a definite effort to try and have green flag finish racing. But there needs to be a line somewhere where you say that's just it. You know, races have finished behind the safety car for a very long time. I mean, was it 2012? The season finished behind the safety car then as well. And there was another season recently that finished behind the safety car as well, I believe. And it's I can't remember off the top of my head now, but it's just something that happens. And if we want to stop that from happening, then fine. Say, you know what, if there is a safety car situation with 5 laps to go or, you know, 30 kilometers, whatever you decide it is, that is automatically a red flag. But then what happens then when you have a red flag situation, a red flag restart, and then you have another accident? Do you have another red flag? Because, you know, red flags breed red flags. It's what happens.
And the other thing is, if you mandate that in the regulations, that leaves the possibility open to manipulation of that rule. Because if you have that situation, what's to stop Red Bull saying to Perez, stop the car on the racetrack, stop it in the middle of the road, so we have to have a red flag now. You know, I'm not saying that Red Bull would be so unsporting, but I'm providing that as an example of how you could game the system to your own advantage. So it's really difficult to write that into the regulation. You have to allow some leeway for the race director to make that call.
Yeah, and it's just grey areas. It's always going to be there because they kind of have to be, because every situation is inherently different and you're never going to have two situations exactly the same. But what's your thoughts on the upcoming? Sorry, you got something else to say, Carl? You got another question?
Yeah, sorry, I was just about to say, just to stop the conversation that we've all had. I was just about to ask another question, but you jump ahead.
Go for it. I was just going to ask about what your thoughts are going to be on next season and what you expect to see and what can we look forward to.
Well, as I mentioned earlier in the show, when the season's over, I go away and do something else with my life. Like I don't do my homework for the next season until I actually start next week. You know, I go away and do something else because otherwise you just get burnout because there's so much to do in season. It is nice that we've got this new era of car regulations, and certainly the Aston Martin that launched today looks phenomenal. I must say it looked really nice. I hope all the cars look as good as that. And it'll be interesting to see if they really can race each other. You know, if they can't get this to work, bearing in mind the brain trust that was put together to design these regulations of poachers turned gamekeepers, then we're never going to get this to work. You know, these are the best possible minds that Formula One could have put together to come up with these regulations. So that'll be interesting to see. And always, when there's always a step change in regulations, we always see somebody make a hash of it and somebody do an unexpectedly good job of it. So it'd be nice to shake up the world order there. But we also have financial regulations in play, which we've never had before with a big regulation change. It will be interesting to see how they play in. Could you have a situation where Haas, having finished bottom of the championship, now have 50% more wind tunnel time than Mercedes and could make something special with it? That's an unknown. We just don't know how that will play into it. And I'm also excited to see the sport's continued growth in the US. I mean, I'm sitting here in the US right now. And in Austin, there was 400,000 people were quoted as our 3-day audience. And I must say that the crowd that was in Austin is as big as I've ever seen. I did a number of stage appearances, and I'd always say to everybody, okay, hands up who's at a Grand Prix for the very first time. And almost always, half of the hands went up. And then I would say, okay, keep your hands up if you're here because you watched Drive to Survive and that's made you interested in sport. And all the hands would stay up. So there was this whole new cross-section that had never seen a Formula One race before, were never interested in the sport, never going to be interested in the sport, who were suddenly glued to it. And it's a lot younger demographic. Formula One's demographic is getting grayer. Who was going to come in and replace them? And it feels like there's a new generation coming in now. And now we have an ownership that really wants to push F1 in the United States in the same way that the Premier League really pushed hard to get the US audience. And now every Premier League game is available live in the US, whereas 20 years ago, I can remember being here, I couldn't find any games here. So that's exciting, that the potential market is there. And now we have two races. You know, we have Miami coming on board as well, which is fantastic. I've always said the US should have three races. That, to me, is very exciting to see how we've had the Middle East expansion, we've had the Far East expansion. Now we're getting back to North America, where Formula One, of course, always had a foothold up until the end of the 1970s, and then it really died a death through the 80s.
So are you going to be in attendance at the two American Grand Prix this year?
Assuming they'll have me. That's certainly, yeah. That is the game plan at present. I don't like to make assumptions, but I think it's likely that they'll be in attendance quite regularly this season after two seasons in exile because of the coronavirus pandemic. I think it'll be a little bit more like a normal championship year. Fingers crossed. I hate to make assumptions based on what we've all been through as a society, but chances are I'll be dossing about the place.
Sure.
What's your this season? What's your five favorite facts of this season, or five favorite stats of this season? Then, as you said, it's such a good one.
2021, you mean?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Last season. Come on, move on, Carl.
Has it started yet? Sean hasn't started until next week.
This is true. This is true. We haven't officially gone back yet. I don't know if there's five favorite statistics. I think what made it great was that it was so close. It was a case of, I can remember, this is a great example, in Portugal, Hamilton won in Portugal. And I think it was the third race of the season, if I remember rightly. And Verstappen had won Imola. Hamilton had just won Bahrain. And Verstappen should have won Bahrain. He let slip through his fingers. Hamilton won Portugal quite convincingly. And I remember people on Twitter saying to me, well, this is all over, isn't it? I mean, this is just going to be another Hamilton-Mercedes benefit. You know, Red Bull had that little bit brief moment in the sun there when they almost won Bahrain and Verstappen stayed on the track at Imola when Hamilton went off. And I said, no, this is Hamilton's won the battle today, but this war is going to be ongoing throughout the summer. And so it proved. You know, the fact that Verstappen at one point was 33 points in the lead after he won the sprint at Silverstone, I think it was. And then it ended up, they went into the last race level on points, first time since 1974. It was astonishing. And the amount of times that they changed positions on the racetrack and hit each other on the racetrack. This wasn't a championship that was fought out on an Excel spreadsheet. We've had other championships like that. 2010, I think, is a great example of a spreadsheet world championship. We had four cars going into the last race with a chance to win it. And we had the dullest race in the world, Vettel won it. And it was like, okay, on paper, this should have been really exciting, but it wasn't. In 2021, we had multiple instances throughout the season where these two guys would be very close or actually run into each other. And it went all the way to the last lap of the season. And that, for me, is what made it the greatest season. It wasn't anything that I could provide to you as a statistician. It was something you had to feel in a visceral sense. And I think that Formula One's missed that a lot lately, that visceral sense of, I have to watch. I can't look at the score. You know, I can't look in the paper afterwards. All right, Grandad. I can't look online afterwards to see how it went. I need to actually watch this live because anything is possible.
Coming from the person who watched it 3 hours late, that was the hardest 3 hours of my life waiting to get to that. I was at a Christmas show, but I remember the yeah, the last time I remember this being anything like that was 2007, 2008, were the only seasons that I can remember in my living memory that were anything like this, or the way they kept bouncing backs and forwards. But I know that Owain has got another question, so I'm just going to switch back to him now.
You said about how 2010's sort of season finale was a sort of spreadsheet world championship, and how, you know, you can tee up four cars going into the last race. And I was just thinking back, you know, I go back and watch the season reviews by the BBC fairly often because I think they're quite good. But, you know, in 20, I think it was 11 and 12, we had five and six world champions on the grid. And I just think from a, just to, my question, I guess, is that, do you think it's almost a, not thankless, that's the wrong word, just a pointless task to, let's say, focus on the number of overtakes, as people tend to do, as why the racing's bad in comparison to having this, as you say, completely tension filled season where, you know, it felt that every race that you know, that tension, you know, if the tension in the season was a rubber band, you were just stretching it until we got to Abu Dhabi. Do you think that's almost the wrong thing to get fixated on when we focus out on a number of overtakes or something like that?
Yeah, it is, absolutely. I agree with you. The 2016 Chinese Grand Prix had 128 on-track passes, yet that never figures amongst people's all-time favourite races. It's not the sheer gross number of passes that determines the excitement. If it did, then watching a NASCAR race at Fontana would be far more exciting every time than watching what we saw in Abu Dhabi or what we saw in Jeddah. I mean, Jeddah was theatre. I mean, it was. We were sitting there thinking, this is such a weird feeling, this race. It feels, it's like it's turned sinister. You know, there's so many, like, subplots to the whole thing beyond just simply Hamilton made one pass of Verstappen. You know, that's just very clinical. Whereas what it felt like was like, this is like a civil war going on in Formula One. This is brilliant. So yes, we do fixate on number of passes as opposed to what do those passes mean? You know, that's the thing. And the DRS era has helped us a lot. But we all know that a lot of those passes are passes that if we were in that position on the racetrack, even I could pass Lewis Hamilton by pressing a button. You know, he can't do anything about it. If I put 20 miles an hour on him just by pressing a button, there's nothing he could do to stop me getting past him. And that's a shame because I miss, you know, I like to see the drivers show their skill in defense. And that's what made the latter stage in Hungary so fantastic. Watching Alonso schooling Hamilton in defense with a car that really had no business at all being ahead of the Mercedes. And yet Alonso kept him there long enough to get Ocon the win. And that was hugely satisfying to watch. The fact that there was not an overtaking move until much, much later than there should have been by just pressing this button. So, yeah, you've got to be careful. I know from experience, from my professional experience, that you can often make statistics, you mold statistics to make them look like anything. But we don't come to the races for statistics. We are a sideshow. The racing is center stage. And ultimately, you have to look at it and say, was that interesting to watch? Would I watch that again in my spare time? And having 128 overtakes hasn't made the 2016 Chinese Grand Prix the most popular choice on F1 TV. So I rest my case.
I have a kind of follow-up question to that. Sort of, do you think that the reason that we fixate on that is maybe because Formula One is full of analytical, formulaic minds who are looking for that? Right, we put in X here, we put in Y here, and we put in Z here, and we'll get, you know, we'll get A, let's say, and we can tune that to what we want. Do you think it'll be maybe almost be better served with someone who's got an idea of story?
Yeah, if you wanted to make it the ultimate example of engineering, you could just have driverless cars and just remove the driver narrative completely. You know, we have a point, we're at the point now where engineering wise we can do that, but it's no one would watch it because no one cares. You know, if we would watch it, we'd be doing that now. We'd get rid of the drivers completely. What fascinates us is seeing a human being against another human being in battle. That's the visceral appeal of the whole thing. And I use that word visceral quite a lot because I always say that you know, the, I sound like an old git, but, you know, the V8, V10, V12s of yesteryear were more visceral than the current turbo hybrid engine in terms of their, the way they made you feel when they would go around the racetrack. I can remember the 10s, for instance, when they go past you, the ground would shake. The ground would shake. It'd be like apocalypse is happening right in front of your eyes. It would just, your ears would bleed. It was just like, wow, this is like, you know, you're at a Grand Prix now. You know, you're not in Kansas, Dorothy. And now the current power units don't do that. But yet, the current power units are by far and away superior engineering-wise. They are an engineering marvel. But just from a visceral standpoint, they don't hit the senses the way, you know, it should be a sensory experience. We're not coming to a maths lecture. That's for the bit when the cars are in the garages. You know, we can talk about that. When the cars are on the racetrack, it should feel like Old Testament battle has been joined. That's what I think Formula One should be.
Yeah, agree totally. So if there's no other questions from anyone else, I've got a question I want to ask. It's a bit more on a personal level. I'd like to know about those medals that are behind you, because I know that producer Chris was asking about them, and I'd just like to know what they're about and what they're from.
Oh, I was going to ask that question
these,
as well.
Oh, there we go. So that's from Olivia, yes, that question.
These are the replica medals from the 2012 Olympics in London, gold, silver, and bronze. My son wore the gold medal in the ceremonies, the opening and closing ceremonies. And I wore the silver because, you know, I'm second rate. and up here is Danny Boyle's liner notes for what the opening ceremony was about. Because a lot of it actually was based upon the Industrial Revolution starting in Shropshire, which is the county where I'm from. I was very surprised to see that play such a prominent role in the opening ceremony. And then just to my left here, on this wall, is the shirt that my son wore in the opening ceremony, or at the opening ceremony. He wouldn't participate in the ceremony, but we were both there. And it has his lanyard around it and the ticket in the lanyard and everything. And it's exactly as he wore it when he was 4. Of course, he's now nearly 15. So, you know, it's been fascinating to see him grow into somebody taller than me. You've got this teeny tiny little t-shirt here. But yes, that was a great day in our lives. So that's why that's there. As I was mentioning before we recorded, we were getting ready to do this show. This giant map of the world, this half of the wall, is being replaced later this week by a giant mural of Verstappen passing Hamilton on the last lap in Abu Dhabi. But it hasn't arrived yet, so we couldn't put it in today's show, unfortunately. But it's due to arrive this week.
I'm not upset about that. I'm not going to lie.
when you see me tweet from this desk, I'll tweet a picture of myself sitting at this desk, and I'm going to say I've put the events of the last lap of the race behind me.
nice, excellent. So if anyone else has got any other questions, speak now or forever hold your peace.
I actually have a question.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if you answered this before, but you said that you took a break from the previous season and you're getting back into work now. So I guess my question is, how do you get ready to get back into the season, and what exactly does that entail for you?
Yeah, good question. I hadn't thought about how it all comes together, because in my head I know how I do it, but you know, it must seem odd, like, what are you going to talk about? The cars haven't run yet. What you'll do at the moment is recap everything that happened last year. And as you saw in the first half of that quiz, I really needed to do the recap of last year because I couldn't remember half of the numbers from it. Anything that can be put into database form from last year that hasn't already been done, so that when I call up on it, when we go back to that race this year, I have all of that to hand, and, you know, in the format that I like to use and so on. A lot of the way our stuff is presented to the broadcasters, it all has to be really, really ergonomic, because there's so much data you can put in there. I could make it 100 pages long. The main thing is you want to boil it down to just a few pages of here's the things you really, really need to know. And then there's a load of stuff that I know I need to know when we're on the air, because Virtual Statman, which is my handle, is actually the service I provide. That's where the name comes from. So they all log in. They can all see a screen full of information. And that information will update as the cars go around the racetrack. So if something interesting happens Say, for instance, just hypothetically speaking, if the lead of the race changed stunningly on the last lap, and suddenly there's a major difference in the results to what you thought it was going to be. You have to have all of that on standby. Like, how many times does that happen? Oh, you know, that's the first time the lead has changed on the last lap of a Grand Prix since Austria 2016. You have to have that bang right there. Throw it out now. You know, we haven't got time to go and look up when it happened. You need to know it straight away. So a lot of that preparation. And the more you do now, while we're in a sort of lull, the more you'll be thankful when we get to triple header weekends, when we've got to do F1, F2, F3, and you'll think, I haven't got enough hours in the day. I'm really glad I did all this in February, so it saved me a few hours now.
Wow, so you have to think about like all of these different scenarios and then put them together. Like, it's so odd because like you'd have to think of how many times, like to think of the category of how many times someone has been overtaken in the last lap. Like, how do you even think of that?
It generally, I imagine it's analogous to how a chess player looks at the board. And you think, okay, so the king's on this side of the board. In this circumstance, this is the sequence of moves I would make. It's a bit like that going on, but with numbers. You know, I guess it's a bit like a Sudoku puzzle going on in your head. Like, okay, so the numbers are here. That means it's this. A great example I can give you of numerical semantics. I was doing the Spanish Grand Prix in 2006 for CBS, which is the network broadcaster here. And it was an unusual race because CBS didn't normally do F1, but they were putting a race on their network. So it was a much, much bigger audience. And it was a boring race, as Barcelona tends to be. And I thought, I need to come up with something here that's interesting for an American viewer. Why would an American viewer care about what's going on here? So Barrichello and Button were circulating like fifth and sixth in the race. So they're both in the points. And I thought, okay, both Hondas, that's two Hondas in the points. Last time we had two Hondas in the points, Mexico 1965, Richie Ginther, Ronnie Button, two Americans, and it was the first win for Richie Ginther, and it was the first win for Goodyear, first of 368, which is an all-time record, the American tire supplier from Akron, Ohio. Threw all that in the race, you know, just like throw that out there, you know, do what you can with it, you know, try and make it interesting for the viewer. One thing my executive producer, my first executive producer, Grant Wilson, always said, if a race is boring, it's our job as the broadcaster to make it interesting. It's not our job to say, well, this is boring. You know, we're being paid to make it interesting for the viewer. So that's our job. So Abu Dhabi, for instance, it doesn't need much effort on our part. But there are some other races you can get where, you know, Monaco, for instance, where it's like, okay, well, tell us why we care. That's why we exist as broadcasters. Because otherwise you can just fill in the blanks for yourself.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. Has anyone else got anything they want to ask Sean, or should we let him go? Because I'm sure it's a beautiful day in San Diego, and here we are in the cold night of the UK and other places.
I've already been to the beach this morning. I went this morning before we came on here. Let me give you a running total of how we're doing here. Here we go. Look at this. It's actual record breaking temperatures here right now. That's what it looks like.
Fantastic. So, yeah, and we've got a weather warning in Scotland for snow.
There we go. Oh, look, we're going to have, it's going to be a cloud.
I've got snow on the mountains up to me.
And I believe we were speaking before you came on, Sean. Olivia was worried that the snow plows were going to pick up on her microphone outside her house. So, yeah.
we could have worked it into the narrative. So one way or another, we would have made it work.
Fantastic. Well, I think we'll start to wrap things up there. Just want to give the fellow podcasters a chance to plug their various mediums that they use. So we'll start off with Carl. If you want to talk about the Monkey Seat and what it is that we do on the Monkey Seat.
The Monkey Seat is very relaxed, very silly chat between me and Tom. We have some guests occasionally talking about bits and pieces. We are this year going to concentrate more on the Formula One because we ended up finding that we ended up talking a bit of that, but we do cover other motorsports as well just for a bit of fun. We swear a lot, we talk a lot, and we're very opinionated. As our opening gambit says, we're two opinionated friend likes, but the world's to right. And we're mostly wrong about 50% of the time, but we have a laugh making rubbish.
Pretty much nailed right on the head there. So, Tom Downey, tell us about everything F1 and why should we listen to you? Okay, well, we seem to have lost Tom, so we'll move on to Owain. So, Owain, how can we follow you and give us a little talk about Grid Talk and anything else that you do as well?
I'll pop myself on the camera for this bit. As Tom's mentioned, I occasionally host the Grid Talk podcast. We aim to do a show for qualifying analysis, previews of the race, and reviews of the race once they've gone out. And also myself, I write sort of a lighter look at the Formula One weekend and try and put round up the sort of best 10 memes that float about on the internet after every race. Just a sort of lighter look at it, which I know it's at times last season we definitely needed. So that's available on sportlightpro.com.
And Olivia, tell us about F1 Total and what you do there.
I am a writer for F1 Total and for the University of Toronto sports newspaper covering F1 weekends. So yeah, you can catch me on f1total.ca or the U of T website.
Okay, so and obviously there's someone else that we haven't spoken about yet. Sean, where can people follow you? And obviously you're very active on social media. Where can people follow you and learn more about you?
Twitter and Instagram at Virtual Statman. Usually I'm talking about F1 stats, but I do wander into the ether of just F1 nerdiness in general. And as regards my real content, professional content, well, just watch a Grand Prix. If you listen to the commentators or look at the graphics, you'll probably see something in there what I wrote.
You often do a bit of a Q&A before a race, don't you, where you offer up people to ask questions about races and they can tweet you and get answers.
Yes, during the driver parade, I usually do a thing called questions, quips, and queries. So that's when we get into the hour or so before lights out. So all the research is done ahead of the race. We're ready to do a broadcast. So it's just like, okay, well, ask me anything, because the chances are the right here and now, the answer is probably sitting right in front of me, because, you know, you've done dozens and dozens of hours of research, and now it's just a case of reacting to whatever happens. So it's actually... I enjoy it as much as probably people asking the questions enjoy it, because often they ask questions that I haven't necessarily considered. So it breaks open a whole new line of research. So it's as good for me as it is for the person asking the questions. So I really enjoy interacting with fans in that way, because some of them have got brilliant questions. And I just think, I haven't thought of that before. We should look into that.
Fantastic. Yeah, I always enjoy those. I always make sure I'm on Twitter picking up on those tweets just before the race, because you always get some nuggets out of those as well. So if you want to hear more from me, I'm on Twitter at TomHorrocksF1. But if you want to hear more from Formula One Grid Talk, we have a huge back catalogue of shows, as well as reviews, previews and analysis. And we have special episodes with interviews and historic season features to get stuck into too. Most recently, myself and George interviewed Morris Hamilton about his book about Murray Walker, The Life of Murray Walker. And that was a really, really good interview as well. So a great book as well. Well worth a read. If you enjoyed this episode of Grid Talk, please consider supporting us via Patreon from as little as $1 a week, so we can get better microphones and cameras and lighting for our hosts, and better bandwidth for things like this as well. Maybe a cheeky pint after recording as well. We're also available on all major podcasting platforms such as Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music, Verbal, OmniStudio and Pocket Cast, as well as being available on the F1 Chronicle website too. Make sure you subscribe to us on the YouTube channel and click the bell to make sure you always know when we are going live. As Owain has said, we often go live we always go live on our race reviews and qualifying reviews and preview shows as well. Thank you for listening, and we will see you soon on Fireside F1's Grid Talk podcast. Goodbye.